Welcome again. This is Mark Steiner, and you're listening to The Mark Steiner Show here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we're about to have a conversation on a bill before our state legislature. It is a landlord and tenant law, actions for repossession, fairness integrity for Baltimore City Renters Act of 2016. And three people involved in pushing that act, proponents of that act, are with us here in the studio. Jessica Lewis, who is housing organizer for the at the Right to Housing Alliance, and Molly Amster, director, Baltimore director for Jews United for Justice. And Felicia Lockett is a member of the Bristol House Tenant Association. And Felicia, Molly, Jessica, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you. Always good to be back. Here.
Thanks, good to have you here for the first time.
Thank you.
Good to have
you here.
So, I mean, we've talked about when the Public Justice Center came out with its report last year. We did a show with you all and others around this issue of the broken system in our community, in our court system around rentals and evictions. And it's 7,000 a year, 5,000 to 7,000 a year. Is that right, Jessica? Right?
Yeah, 6,000 to 7,000. I think the average is about 6,800 a year.
And that the vast majority of people who are tenants do not have attorneys.
Yes, vast majority. Of the 300 renters that we surveyed, none of them had representation.
So before we get into the heart of the bill, I just want to ask a very quick question here. Felicia, I'm glad you're in the studio with us. Welcome.
Thank you. And
I read your story before you came. So, to talk a bit about your experience, just to kind of give some gravity to this.
Well, in reference to the rent court, is definitely an offset imbalance dealing with the landlord and how tenants are being handled in a sense. A lot of tenants, like I said, as Jessica said, do not have any understanding of the law. When they come in, they don't have representation. The issue is that when they are brought to court, a lot of times they might not even receive the proper documents to know they're supposed to be to court. They don't understand how to read it. And then not really understand what they're actually in court for as far as the charges. Because even with the water is deemed as rent. So that's added on to different things like that. So it's hard to understand that. And we just need to get a point where we can be proactive in letting the tenants understand what their rights are, how the court system works, and how to use it to their to their benefit and even advantage to some degree. But it's such a biasness towards the landlords because they can come in, don't have certain paperwork, and it's basically word of mouth of what they're saying that this tenant owes and is accepted in that manner, which is, at this point, the tenant is just sitting there and have no idea what to do. So it puts a tenant in a bad situation.
And that was your your situation was similar to that, right? Around your water bill and the landlord?
Oh, wow. My situation, to try to tighten this thing up. it's a lot because as you have with my situation, it was dealing with harassment because I'm part of a tenant association. So when I'm brought into court, it was extra fees added on to my account that shouldn't even have been there because my rent was in escrow. But nevertheless, it's the same thing would happen with a lot of tenants. A lot of fees are added on that is not even by law, don't even supposed to go before the judge as part of a judgment. So when I went through this whole thing, it was just kind of taking a stand. But in my case, luckily, I was able to connect with Rental Housing Alliance, who connected me to the Public Justice Center. And even with the Lord, I have to put him in there. With that going forth, allowed me to be able to be successful in defeating the landlord. However, it wasn't a defeat in the district court. It had to go to circuit court because the district court is like you put evidence there and it's like it just turned over and not even acknowledged. But in a higher court, it just seemed like they're more detailed in getting to the fine essence of what the case is about.
So to talk a bit about all this, the cases like your case and other, so many thousands of others led to this. The bill you're trying to change what happens in the housing court. So why don't you start us off, Jessica, with that?
Yeah. So the report, the Justice Diverted report that was published by the Public Justice Center was based on a study that Right to Housing Alliance and Public Justice Center conducted over about a year. We identified a number of issues that were preventing renters from receiving justice through the court that they deserved. And what came out of that was a suite of recommendations that we could change in Baltimore City through the Code of Public Local Laws regarding landlord-tenant issues. And like Felicia talked about, one of the biggest issues we found is landlord accountability and then them not being held accountable for charges that they were suing for in court. So the bills that we're proposing, the bill we're proposing, the Fairness and Integrity for Baltimore City Renters Act, is aims to fix some of these imbalances in court. It's really about leveling the playing field. So when landlords come to court, they have to come correct. They have to bring an account statement that shows rent charges versus non-rent charges so that the judge can determine what is allowable to collect through the court and what can be used for an eviction. It gives tenants more notice before they're sued in court. There's a 14-day pre-filing notice period that allows renters to have one more paycheck before they're being taken to court. We found that about half of the cases going through court didn't result in a warrant for eviction. So we know something's happening in that two-week period that the cases are resolving on their own. But landlords are still filing on day one, which just creates this enormous volume of unnecessary litigation. So we figure if we can cut down on the amount of litigation going through the court, it frees up the court to actually handle these issues where either where landlords and tenants have legitimate disputes over either the amount owed or habitability of the property or non-rent charges trying to be included as rent. So the pre-filing notice period is the most important piece of this, I think. It's really the difference between getting a judgment in court and getting having another paycheck.
Which gives you saying so that literally gives 2 weeks notice before they can actually have to appear in court.
Yes, yeah, so it's a written notice that will have to go to the tenant saying from the landlord saying your rent is now late. These are the charges that we're seeking. This is We're gonna file on you in court in 14 days if you've not paid. These are going to be the associated court costs. And then we'll also make it possible for renters to have access to some of the documentation and evidence that the landlords are going to present in court against them so that they can have time to prepare a legal defense, to have access to legal resources, and get help actually defending themselves in court, knowing what's going to be presented there.
So I want to just ask Molly Amster this question, so just to kind of lay things out and be clear. So what does your organization have to do, Jews United for Justice, have to do with this? I mean, I understand the tenants group that you work for, Jessica. So what's the involvement here, Molly?
Sure. So JUFJ, Jews United for Justice, we work on usually one issue at a time. Right now in Baltimore, we're working on two. But the folks that are involved in JUFJ basically look at what's going on around the city and talk to different advocates. And preferably, we try to partner with groups who are directly affected by an issue. And when we find an issue where we can make a difference, where we have a unique ability to assist, we get involved. So we were in touch with Jessica back in the beginning of January of 2015. We had a committee work with them to understand the issue, and we had a meeting in March where 65 people voted to get involved in this. And I think folks felt really compelled by the issue, how unfair things are in court. I think the Jewish community's role in housing in this city was something that compelled people to want to get involved in making it a more just playing field in the rent court. And we're using the power and privilege that we have to get legislators to support this issue and see its importance.
So people need to hear that, and I want to make sure that's out there. I'm going to understand what that's about. And one of the parts of this bill, before I get into the time we have left here, what the battle's about in Annapolis and how that's taking place and who's sponsoring the bill and what your thoughts are about that. One of the pieces of the bill was that I found interesting, two pieces here, that if a landlord has to document its basis for a non-payment of a rent claim, but that's tagged onto compliance, proving that the landlord's in compliance with lead compliance and licensing laws. Now, that's a different and unique kind of thing. So that marries these two things. What does that mean?
Well, I think that the two are really intimately connected because landlords are often allowed to use the court who are not in compliance with laws that are meant to protect renters. So this, you know, this account that not coming with account statements, not being able to even prove that the renters owe money or that they that they're only charging for non-rent charges, landlords aren't. Are also overwhelmingly not compliant with lead risk reduction on the date of trial, according to the study that we did. 70% of renters, 79% of those landlords were not compliant on the date of trial. But I think about 70% of them still won their cases. So we're basically eliminating the possibility for landlords to endanger the health and safety of their renters, and also use the court to evict them. That just seems like a very unfair double standard.
So talk about – I'm curious in all this as well. Before there's another piece I'm going to bring out here. But and Felicia, just the role that you play in organizing and getting people behind this bill.
Well, one of the things that we're doing is making it aware of what we've been going through. As Jessica said, a lot of time they're not compliant. And the issue with that is they don't even comply on the application. It's no lead paint number. They don't even acknowledge whether they're even legally able to even own a rental property. So what we're doing is we're trying to bring it back together, the tenants that was in not only in our building, but even connected buildings in our area. So that way we just get our numbers together and, you know, we can make an impact. Thing is, a lot of times because people don't really know what's going on and have an idea of even how the court system works, they have a fear of it. And our thing is to be proactive, let them have an understanding of how it works, what the issues are, and then even get some feedback, because a lot of times we get good feedback where it takes us to a whole different approach and what we needed to do. So the thing is to bring those associations together in the community, bring those different rental units together in the community, and let everybody take part in creating what's helpful to them, not excluding or not excluding the landlord in itself, because they do have some rights because they're renting and they're there in business. But the most part, we want to make sure that the tenants who is providing this income to them are actually serviced the way they should be.
Another piece of this bill, I want to just get this out and talk about the politics going on here, is that there would be fees associated now, if this bill passes, that help tenants pay for their legal defense. Do I have that right?
Well, I think the additional filing fee that's proposed in the bill would actually help fund some of this, help fund and that wouldn't be able to be collected through the court. It wouldn't be passed along to the renter. I'm sorry. That wasn't articulated well. But it's basically to help fund with the assistance of a navigator program, like Felicia talked about, to assist in renters, being able to prepare a defense, being able to locate records from the Maryland Department of the Environment, to be able to locate records with Baltimore Housing, to find out in advance of a trial if their landlord is in fact compliant so that they can properly defend themselves if they're not. So the idea is that the additional filing fees would offset the cost of a program to assist renters.
And these would be filing fees the landlord has to pay?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to come back to these things. Listen, we don't have a landlord here, but let me play a little devil's advocate for a moment. But I'm curious about the bill and who's sponsoring it, Molly. And you've got, if I understand, three Baltimore delegates who are behind this bill?
Yeah. So Sandy Rosenberg is the lead sponsor of the bill. And the other delegates that are co-sponsoring are Kurt Anderson and Nat Oakes. But I will say that we've been meeting with the delegates in over the last 2 weeks, and there are lots of other folks who wanted to co-sponsor, but we had about 10 minutes to collect signatures. So we are feeling great about the amount of support we've gotten from a lot of folks. And Senator Catherine Pugh is sponsoring on the Senate side.
So this has to go through the House Judiciary Committee first. Is that where it starts?
This has to go through Environment and Transportation on the House side and Judicial Proceedings on the Senate side.
Okay. So on the Senate side, that would be Senator Bobby Zirkin from Baltimore County.
Correct.
And who runs the committee on the House side?
Kumar Barve.
Oh, Kumar Barve.
Is the chair. And Delegate Dana Stein is the vice chair there.
So you might have an easier hearing on the House side than the Senate side, politically speaking now.
We'll see.
Is there a danger the bill could be put in the drawer and not be seen?
Well, I think, because these are laws that are state laws that only apply to Baltimore City. Our hearing is we have an initial hearing in front of the Baltimore delegation of the city delegates. Uh-huh. And so we're hoping that a recommendation from them is going to go a long way to helping in the committee hearings.
So now, wait,
that's happening on Friday.
I'm sorry. You're saying that's happening this Friday.
Yes.
And then you'll know by after Friday whether or not the delegates support the majority of the bill or not. But if I was a landlord, I guess I might say, wait a minute, someone's not paying the rent and I have to pay an extra fee to go to court?
This is actually...
Right? I could hear that objection.
So the filing fees in Baltimore City are actually really, really significantly lower than the average around the country, which is about $140. And right now, landlords pay $30 to file against renters in court. So this isn't, wildly off base. This is actually still a significantly lower fee than people are paying elsewhere in the United States in order to be able to evict people through rent court.
I just want to add something to that. And also what this does is keep a watch eye on what tenants are being charged for them court fees if it is applying to the tenant, because now you have a situation where the court is charging $22 for the filing, $5 for the sheriff to deliver the first notice. But then you look on your renter account and you see an extra $10, $15 that the landlord has charged you, even though they filed it themselves and didn't have an outside, organization to do it. So these are extra charges that's being applied. But I think this helps control that, to make sure that whatever's being put forth is going to where it's supposed to go to, and it's an exact amount. Because other than that, the tenants, again, are left at the whim of the landlord of charging them even on that, in that way. So
if you get the hearing when you meet with them on Friday, so the Molly's, where does it go from there? It has to be filed at that point, right?
It'll go to each of the two committees.
I wonder, just to get into the politics of this, I can see a lot of opposition to this bill from around the state, and that it's not always easy to fight for legislation that has to do with working people in our community. I mean, that's always been kind of a battleground.
Right. And I think that the voices of low income renters have been historically not part of the sort of political conversation in Baltimore City. There was a lot of focus around the foreclosure crisis in Baltimore City.
Right.
It should be a large conversation. But this eviction crisis is just year after year after year of between 6,000 and 7,000 people displaced from their homes, destabilizing communities, and that's not seen as a crisis. And I think, what Felicia was talking about building that collective power among renters is going to shift the political conversation about the interests of, working poor people in the city.
To me, this is really kind of an interesting bill. I mean, I was wondering how this was going to play out when we had these conversations earlier last year, when the Public Justice Center came out with a report talking about the conditions in the district court, in the rent court here in Baltimore, which are, even though across the country they're not good, it was markedly different and worse in Baltimore, at least for the tenant, than the rest of the country, which is kind of an interesting piece. And that hasn't changed a lot over the years. I mean, that's been the case for decades.
Right. And Barbara Bezdeg at University of Maryland conducted a similar study in 1992 that showed a lot of the same things we're facing now. There wasn't sort of a reaction to that. There wasn't a sort of an organizing effort to remedy the issues then, but there is now. And I think that it's growing really broad support. The coalition partners are growing. It includes Chase House in Mount Vernon, which is a public housing building privatizing through the RAD program. It includes Baltimore Block. It includes the Bristol House Tenant Association. And I also want to note, in you know, we understand that there's going to be a lot of opposition from landlord industry folks. But one of our supporters is a nonprofit affordable housing developer and landlord in Park Heights called Park Heights Angel. And they've actually, you know, they've actually written support for this, saying if you're a responsible landlord, you shouldn't have any issues with anything in this bill. And they'll be testifying Friday and speaking at the press conference we're having that morning before the
because
hearing.
The issue here is that this means basically, I mean, one of the biggest pieces in the bill is that if a landlord has an issue with a tenant, that they can't just immediately put them in court, that there has to be a 2-week waiting period.
Yeah.
Is that one of the biggest pieces of this?
Yeah, that's the 14-day waiting period that Jessica – pre-filing notice that Jessica mentioned. And I think it's really important to note that we're in the really small minority of states that don't have a pre-filing notice. I think 39 states around the country have a pre-filing notice of some length. And, you know, we're really operating in a sue first, talk later sort of framework. And we're overusing one of the most scarce resources we have, which is our judicial system. We should be asking people to talk first, and then if it doesn't work out, then come to court. And as Jessica said, that will cut down the volume enormously by half, we think. And there's up to 1,000 cases a day in the court, which doesn't allow time for judges to really hear a case and mete out justice. And that's why, even though 80% of people come to court with major habitability issues and 57% of them could use those as defenses against their eviction, they are not successfully doing that because the judges don't have the time to hear the cases.
So this is really fascinating. So what we're going to do is, I mean, I guess we'll be in touch with you all after tomorrow to see how this thing happened with the Baltimore City delegation and follow up on this with some other delegates and invite some other folks on here in the next couple of weeks to have really a kind of a debate on this thing between delegate senators and some of you, maybe Landlord Association as well, to get this out on the table and have this heard. I think that's important. This is a uniquely important bill. So I want to thank all of you for coming in. Felicia Lockett, member of the Bristol House Tenant Association. Pleasure to meet you. Thank you for coming today. Molly Amstrad, Baltimore Director of Jews for United for Justice. And Jessica Lewis, Housing Organizer for the Right to Housing Alliance. Good to have you on the studio.
Thank you, Martin.
We have to take a short break, but when we come back, I'll be talking with urban education professor Jessica Schiller about her new book, The New Reality for Suburban Schools, how suburban schools are struggling with low-income students and students of color in their schools. You don't want to miss the fascinating conversation coming up, so stay with us.